And it's now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. It was just a mere 4 days and 32 years ago that Randy, our speaker tonight, found himself getting sober. And he's managed to stay sober all that time. He did have the opportunity to seek treatment when he was down in Fullerton. He spent several years, 8 years down in Fullerton, keeping those people sober all by himself before he moved to San Fernando Valley, where they frankly just do AA wrong. But he spent 22 years trying to straighten them out before he moved to Bakersfield and found a nice, warm AA community to embrace him. I will ask you to please help me to welcome my friend Randy. And these meetings are kind of difficult. It's hard to talk to your screen without any kind of visual or audio feedback. So if you would please join me in practicing things like hand waves or our applause, our sign language applause, or give him a few thumbs up when you connect with something he's got to say, direct from the epicenter of recovery at Bakersfield tonight. I bring you Randy. And Randy, I'll ask you to unmute yourself.
I'll unmute myself.
Perfect.
Thank you, Bill. Randy, alcoholic. Pleasure to be here with you guys tonight. Geez, when Bill was talking about my geographic trajectory, it seems like I'm going backwards. Before I go any further, yes, I am wearing pants. I've already been asked that 3 times tonight. Yes, thank you very much. Obviously, you know, this is a little bit different. I did raise my hand initially for birthdays, but then I figured I'll get my shot. So yes, Saturday was 32 years for me. And thank you. But I remember when I was new and people with time would, because there were some old timers back in 1988, and I couldn't really identify. So I know how you newcomers are thinking, particularly, you know, the ladies in the sober living. I know exactly what you're thinking, which is, it's just kind of mind-blowing, and I could relate more to the people. I remember one of my first meetings when I was still in rehab, I saw a friend of mine, you know, a guy I used to drink with, get high with for years, and he already had 6 months. And that really, first of all, it seemed like just a huge amount of time to me, and I couldn't believe it. You know, I was just thinking, you know, I went up to him after because he got his chip, and I was like, dude, how in the world? You know, your sister grows weed in Hawaii, and you ship it over here, and we had so much fun, and you've been getting loaded since we've been walking. I knew the guy since third grade, and, you know, I just couldn't believe it. So it was those things that resonated more with me being new, because it was, even though the 6 months was mind-blowing, I could get my mind around it, right? Like, I could maybe not imagine myself being 6 months sober, but it seemed like it was achievable. You know what I mean? I was really young when I came in. I was 23. Problem with male authority. So when the panels of the old men came in and sat in front of us and told us, you know, how to live, I didn't really want to hear that. So I was raised in Orange County. That's why I was in Fullerton. And I would describe myself as a child and even a teenager, hypersensitive and didn't like authority. Yeah, I didn't like anyone telling me what to do, particularly males. My parents divorced when I was 8 years old and shook me up pretty bad. I had a father that wasn't really involved much in my life. And so I grew up without that male authority figure and therefore when you tried to exert yourself as an older male gentleman to me, I recoiled from that. So it took me a while to realize what hypersensitivity meant. I think people call it oversensitive. I think for myself, it's more hypersensitive, which is, you know, I used to think oversensitive meant you were just, I don't know, lack of a better word, a pussy. And what hypersensitive means is everything in the world is just much stronger to you. So smells are stronger, sounds are stronger, feelings are stronger. Everything is just magnified. So you can tell right now why I wanted to shut that off. And, you know, I was prone to fear and depression, and those things felt really strong to me. I had absolutely no reason in the world to feel that way. I just did. It didn't matter what happened. You know, I had plenty of friends in school. I was, you know, I wouldn't consider myself quote unquote popular, but everybody knew me. I could hang out with anyone. But what did I choose? You know, I chose to shut off, you know, and alienate myself from essentially everybody. By my senior year in high school, I was basically eating lunch by myself. And that just started me down a path. So my daily drinking and drugging career, you know, for me, drugs are a big part of my story because they were easier to get when I was underage than alcohol was. You know, my parents didn't drink. It was not in the house. I'm the total black sheep of my mother's side of the family. My father's side is in Washington State. So I stuck out like a sore thumb. And, you know, getting alcohol was, you know, too much work for me. Not that I didn't drink all the time, but, you know, somehow we got it. But it just seemed like those enhancements were easier to get. And I would describe myself as a... essentially a garbage can. I mean, you know, that mechanism for me to say screw it to the world and drink and use and shut off those feelings, that's essentially the only reason. You know, when I was new, I heard a speaker say there's two types of alcoholics, those that want it in and those that want it out. And I want it out. Not that I never had a good time, but... you know, I wanted those feelings of fear and insecurity and, you know, all those negative feelings just to go away. So I put anything in my body that would do that. Alcohol, drugs, Robitussin. Who's Robo'd, by the way? Anyone? Come on, this is the San Joaquin Valley. You had to have Robo'd. I don't know. I mean, somebody said they found a leaf or something of some plant that got you high, and so I tried it. I mean, I would do anything if you told me or I had any inclination that it was going to do some good, you know? I never drank like a gentleman, not one time. In high school, you know, I was probably a freshman. Somehow we got a bottle of 151. It was some overnight, I think it was the basketball team every year had like an overnight 24-hour gym thing. So when that hit my ears, it was like 24-hour get loaded without mom calling. So I just turned that bottle upside down and showed everybody up, and they used to call me, they called me Fish after that. And I thought that was so cool. Like, Fish, yeah. I'll outdrink anyone, you know? So I never drank like a gentleman. I never had a desire. It never even crossed my mind, actually. You know, a couple of times I would think, geez, I got to get it together, or, you know, don't make an ass out of yourself, or, you know, But that took a lot of effort. You know, maybe the handful of times I did maintain took a shitload of effort and was not enjoyable. So my daily drinking and using career was not that long, you know, maybe 5-6 years. But in those 5-6 years, I did a lot of damage. And with family relationships, went to jail a few times for drug possession and sales. You're looking at the worst drug dealer on the planet, by the way. If I didn't sell it within 3 hours, it was gone. So, you know, and I remember coming out of Orange County Men's Central Jail. It was either the second or third time. And my first thought, I'll never forget this as long as I live. Walking across the lawn, they always let you out at some insane hour, so it's like dark, probably 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning, whatever. And I'm thinking, those fucking cops, like, they're not going to tell me what to do. No one is going to tell me I can't do what I want to do. And that feeling just permeated, and I'll never forget it. It was so strong, you know, and I didn't realize, you know, like I'm describing, I think, the typical alcoholic, which is everything is a problem except alcohol, right? So if mom would just get off my back, you know, I'm still living at home right before rehab. Mom gets off my back, sister gets off my back, she was even worse. Cops get off my back, you know, the judicial system gets off my back, and I just didn't realize that anything was wrong, you know. I mean, I knew things were wrong, but it was never me and anything that I was doing. And I realized after rehab, you know, I'll just share my experience. So I went into rehab Monday, April 4th, 1988. Not voluntarily. I had a intervention, just like the TV show. It's exactly like the TV show. Family sitting around the room telling you how you're destroying your life, right? And when you're young, there were plenty of young people in AA at that time, thank God. When you're young, you feel kind of invincible. So I didn't really think that. I'm thinking in my mind, I have to say yes to this intervention or they're never going to get off my back. So I'll go do it. And when I get out, I will leave meth and coke behind, right? And I will just smoke weed and drink, and everything will be okay. I'll just have to hide it a little bit better. And, you know, as long as everybody just stops yapping, then everything's going to be great. Father was there. He still tells me, even to this day, he does not think I'm an alcoholic. Not an easy thing to hear. But I've learned to kind of just let that go. He was there, but not really involved. So my other family members, my sister, my cousin, my mother, and my, yeah, I think that was about it. So I went, and I think what happened for me was I started the path to learn a new way to live. And I didn't really think I was an alcoholic. Like I said, you feel invincible. I mean, I did things like we had a physical therapist come in and for the exercise. This was only 16 days. They didn't have those 3 6-month programs. So she would come in and lead exercises, and we did this jog around the compound or whatever. And I'm thinking, I got to keep up with her. Like, I got to lead the pack, right? Because I have to show them my first 5-6 days were basically just to show everybody that I didn't really belong. Like, it's working, you know, you guys can do whatever you want to do, but I'm just here and, you know, I don't really belong here. So she even said, geez, you're in pretty good shape. And I was like, yeah, see, you know, I'm thinking in my mind, see, I don't really belong here. And I only explained that story because that's the picture of how I thought at that time. But it was beginning to show me a new way of life because I had no comparison, right? My life was what it is, revolved virtually 100% around mind-altering substances. And I didn't have any frame of reference that there was something different. So what they started to do, they started taking us to meetings. I went to a meeting on that night at St. Jude Hospital in Fullerton, and raised my hand as an alcoholic because I didn't want to be that guy that, even though I didn't believe it, I didn't want to be that guy that, you know, can't play ball, right? That's just sitting there and doesn't... I figured I would stick out more if I didn't raise my hand than if I did. So I went along with the pack, played the game, whatever. And when I got out of there, that first year was extremely important for me. And it didn't involve a ton of what we think of as the program with steps and everything else, but it did involve showing me that life was possible without alcohol and drugs. And I hung out with the young people. We went to dances in Long Beach. We went to Santa Ana, had a club. Anaheim had an Alano club. All these places had dances. Newport, Alano club. And... you know, it felt really strange at first, but essentially all I did was hang out, you know, and go to meetings. So people ask me why I could have just as easily gone back to what I was doing. You know, I think that's the closest thing to God's grace that I can think of in my story. Because I always feel like God and I are a team. There were plenty of times, especially on cocaine, where I, you know, would start bawling and God save me and please help me, Jesus, and all that stuff that we do, and nothing ever happened, right? No changes were ever made because I wasn't willing to do anything. So I really feel during that first year or two for myself, we were a team. And I think what God was telling me at the time was just do the footwork. Don't worry about anything. Just go to meetings. Don't drink or use. And I'll show you what to do, you know. And I really felt I went back to college. I had gone to college before that. But it was just, it became completely unmanageable. Like, I went to junior college, I went to Orange Coast College, and dropped out of a lot of classes, but kept some. So I went back, you know, and I remember having a meeting with a counselor at Cal State Fullerton, and I already had, like, 3 years of college as far as units go, but I had nothing to a degree at all. Maybe not nothing, but all of those 3 years did not count. It wasn't like I only had 1 year left and I'm going to graduate. I had to do it their way, right? I had to go and figure out what classes I had to take. And I remember sitting in my car before class one day. I was probably only sober less than 2 years, and just really feeling God's presence and peace. Like, I'm just putting one foot in front of the other. And that's kind of what I tell newcomers, and I've seen it, you know, come out of the mouths of others to newcomers. I didn't want a lot of pressure from people, although some people did pressure me a little bit, but I just needed to be part of something, you know, is kind of the best way I can describe it, if that makes any sense. So I don't know if I'm getting it from osmosis or I'm getting it, you know, from the mouths of others or whatever, but it kept me sober at least that first year. So I had a new frame of reference. I knew that there was another way to live. Now I had a choice to make. And if there's anything I can say to the newcomers, give this a chance because it's going to show you a new way to live. Then you have a choice. When you're out there drinking and using, you really don't have a choice because of the disease of alcoholism. So fast forward, I did end up graduating from college almost 3 years later. And let me back up for a second. So with that hypersensitivity really comes fear of the future, you know, and I couldn't get my mind around how to do this world, you know, I just couldn't get my mind around it. How do you go to school and get a degree? How do you find a wife and settle down and have a family? I still struggle with some of these things. I couldn't imagine living what I saw other people living. I just couldn't imagine doing that. And therefore, you know, that also fed my alcoholism because I don't care. Basically, what I wanted to feel when I drank and used was apathy. I don't care about those things anymore. Therefore, for this hour or whatever, I'm not scared. I'm not fearful. So I just kind of pursued my path, you know. I kept going to meetings. I my family relationships got better. My story is not one of a straight trajectory up and up and up and up and up and better and better and better. I like to tell people, you know, at least for me, maybe some other people that have been sober a long time have different stories, but my story is the longer I've been sober, the longer the roller coaster ride has been, you know? And we're in it right now, right? We're kind of all in the same boat. And I'm certainly have struggles today. So I've had periods where, you know, I'm not as spiritual, I'm not doing the things I need to do, or I'm going through the motions and not really feeling it. I did have quite a lapse in, I ended up getting married a little bit late, had a son when I was 40, thinking that if I waited till I got older, that's going to fix everything, right? So that didn't work, and divorcing my wife, unfortunately, but it is what it is, you know, it's part of my story, and I think it began for me possibly some unresolved issues from the past, not possibly, surely some unresolved issues from the past, but also my behavior when the Great Recession hit in 2008. And the fear of financial insecurity did not leave me. I have a tendency, if I let myself go, like a lot of alcoholics, we can let ourselves go down what I call that path, right, which is fear. And I let myself go, You know, there were a ton of people struggling. My industry just completely fell apart. And I went with it. You know, I was angry. I was fearful. I didn't like my life. And I wasn't going to meetings much, if at all. That was the beginning of my marriage crumbling, you know, and something that I think we could have recovered from that, but, you know, it takes two to tango, so, you know, I can't change her. By the way, Al-Anon has helped me a ton, highly recommended for anyone that goes there or is thinking about going there. So, I don't know, 4 or 5 years later, I decided, you know, I had to make a choice. Again, it's these choices, right? We all face forks in the road at some point, and we always have choices to make. I didn't drink or use during that period. There were some very, very dark times where I'm not even sure I cared whether I was sober that much, to be honest with you. I'll just call myself out right now. It's not that I wanted to necessarily pick up. I mean, I can go get it anytime I want, right? We all can. But I stopped caring about that part of my life. I had some friends go out. It's easy when you get sober when you're young to forget, I guess. And I had, you know, several friends around 15, 20 years sober decide they were not alcoholics, kept in touch with them. Seemingly their lives were not falling apart. It's very easy for the, geez, I was a kid, you know, I'm a man now. I always think of the guy that drank the whiskey with the milk in the Big Book, right? I mean, same type of thing, but I didn't do it. But all the thoughts were there. And, you know, I compared myself to them, and they were, you know, they're who they are, and I am who I am. So, you know, I did have doubts. Then I got my father telling me, geez, you're not an alcoholic. And there were times, 20 plus years sober, you know, we've all seen long-term sobriety lost, where I was actually thinking I was not an alcoholic, or maybe I was not an alcoholic. I don't know why I thought that, you know, because alcoholism to me is more of a way of thinking rather than a way of drinking, and never stopped thinking like an alcoholic. And adding alcohol, I think this is God's grace part two, I guess. I never thought that alcohol would fix anything. Now looking back, now that I've gotten more serious about my program, I can see that not only would it not have fixed it, I mean, it's like throwing gasoline on a fire, right? I knew that that would probably happen. So there was enough fear, healthy type of fear against that happening, where I just didn't want that. I knew I was miserable. I had been around certainly long enough to know what I had to do. Kind of stopped believing it would work, you know, the things that we do, the prayer, the meditation, the helping others, thinking about others. And it's just what we do, you know. We have the tools. We know what the medicine is. So, you know, fast forward to today. I might make this a little bit shorter than some of the meetings, but in 2016, I decided to open a fun business, a kind of a hip thrift store, if you will, with clothes and accessories and things like that. I'm a big music buff, and I wanted to bring in kind of a music element with it. It's been fun. It hasn't gotten me rich. I haven't gotten where I wanted to be, where I first thought I might be with this business. But I think God's had his hand in the business. And I don't want to be defined by it. I remember going into it and opening my first store thinking, I don't want this to be my whole life. You know, I don't want to be defined by the store. So I ended up in 2018 opening a second location in Bakersfield. My first location is in San Fernando Valley. And, you know, I'll tell you that sometimes you don't see things working in yourself, you know. Quick to see it in others, slow to see it in yourself can go both ways, right? When somebody's doing something wrong and right. And it's really hard for me to give myself credit as far as, you know, working the program or seeing the positives in my life. And, you know, needless to say, we're shut down. Income essentially zero. This would normally be a time where, I mean, I kind of liken what's going on now to 2008 and 2009, where I completely fell apart, and I'm not doing that now. You know, I'm not doing that. Am I happy about this? No. Do I like staring into a computer, listening to myself talk for a half hour? No. Right? Do I like no income? No. Do I have some fear of financial insecurity? Of course. I mean, I don't think that anyone in my situation, I mean, it's normal feelings. You know, the feelings are normal. It's what you do with the feelings. And I go down the shithole, right? And the longer I stay in the shithole, the harder it is to climb back up. So I haven't let myself go, and I owe that 100% to this program. You know, thinking about others, I kind of have to force myself sometimes, you know, like, have you called anybody today? Have you reached out to, you know, I've seen some people on Facebook. We got a bunch of groups. I'm sure you guys got your group up there. Some people really seem to be struggling, you know, my friends, and they're not the obvious ones. You know, the obvious ones are, you know, I had a year and a half and I just got loaded, right? But I'm looking at like their posts and thinking, where'd that come from? I mean, you don't seem happy, you know, so reach out to that guy. You know, we're here, and I think the important thing, you know, for us as a group tonight, you know, the only thing you had to do was show up, right, and not isolate, and see some other faces on the screen, you know, and try to be a part of, because I'm a big isolator, and I will go down that hole, you know, if I let myself. I think the beauty of what I'm going through now is that it hasn't been that hard to stay out of the hole. I finally got something after 30 plus years. It hasn't been that hard to stay out of the hole because I really had to work hard before. And sometimes it was just too much work. You know, I remember going to meetings, you know, when I was new and hearing work the steps, right? And I remember thinking, work, you know, I don't want to do anything here, you know. I just want the joy and the peace and what everybody else seems to have, but I don't want to work for it, you know, and part of that might have been my youth at the time or whatever, but I'm finally starting to realize, you know, I guess part of the fruits of the program is that peace, you know, and I finally don't have to work as hard as I used to. So with that, I think I will stop, and thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thank you. Can we